Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are in for what?
For 11. 411. It's the information channel.
411. That's what I was thinking. 411. This, we're giving you the information.
Of course. Where else would you go?
Yeah.
Yep.
Loaded.
Happy birthday again to you.
Yeah. What?
Happy birthday again. I'm just going to make sure you get all the birthday wishes you can get because you turned some ungodly age last week.
Yeah. Well, here I am.
You feel better? You feel older? You feel okay?
I don't feel any different, curiously.
Well, I would like to say happy Passover, happy Easter. I got schnockered last night at the Passover Seder.
A Seder? You drank too much of the Seder?
Well, we start the Seder off with a traditional sipping of Shlivovitz. Have you heard of this before?
No, this is all news to me.
So Shlivovitz is a plum brandy. It's a variety of different manufacturers.
It's like a schnapps.
Yeah, but it's 100 proof.
It's like a 100-proof schnapps.
Yeah, it's pretty potent. It tastes pretty much like a combination of ethanol and paint thinner going down.
Oh, okay. Great.
So we start off with that. I went out of my way to try to find a really good bottle of this stuff. I think they're from Czechoslovakia, Slovenia. There's a variety of countries that make these. So I went and I found this bottle, this 10-year-old aged Slivovitz by R. Jelinek. And I'm so excited about this, right? I find it.
Sounds authentic.
Yeah, I bring it home. Turns out I had the same bottle sitting in my bar. Yeah, I felt like an idiot. Anyway, happy Easter also coming up this week. We have Easter and markets are closed for the Good Friday holiday this week coming up on, you guessed it, Friday.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Why did they close the markets on Good Friday? Why?
I think it's a combination Good Friday / Easter. I don't know. It's just tradition. Now, there's some weird speculation that the reason they close markets on Good Friday, because a lot of people take off, I assume, that day to do their Good Friday stuff. And there is something odd about that. If markets are open on Good Friday, there's the potential for a Black Friday crash because something's happened in the past. There's some weird rumor. I don't think it's true.
So it's a superstition.
Yep. So anyway, hopefully all of you in the chat room can hear us just fine. I think a couple of people are questioning whether there's a show tonight. So hopefully you're coming through. You should be listening to us right now live on DH Unplug each and every Tuesday evening at 9. It's a little bit earlier than 9 tonight, but 9 o'clock you can tune in. Go over to dhunplug.com and there's a little link on the right side that says, hey, come on over and listen in. So you can listen
to
that.
Why would they think there's not a show today?
Somebody's saying, is there a show tonight?
Huh. Well, that's funny because I was in Sacramento earlier and I had to get back for the show.
Oh?
Yeah, I'm scoping out the area for a big no agenda meetup at the Train Museum.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Well, I'll tell you, I've never been to that museum before and I was stunned.
Why?
That is one of the finest museums I've ever been to anywhere.
Really?
It's outrageous. It's nothing like what you think of a train museum because they're all over the country, these train museums. And what they really tend to be is some guy collect a bunch of old locomotives that were going to be scrapped and he bought them for scrap price. And then they put them on some tracks and maybe they have a little trolley or something driving around. And it's just, you know, it's just a collection of junk for all practical purposes. Although it's interesting, the normal train museum. This is nothing like that. This is an outrageously well-curated, fantastic museum. I was shocked, actually.
The only train museum that I know, other than that, is the Museum d'Orsay, which is a museum in an old train station.
Right. I've never been to that museum. Oh, I should probably
great
go.
Great museum. But this is different. This is not a museum. This is a museum of trains, not a museum in a train station.
No, there's a museum of trains. It's extremely interesting.
Right. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, let me give you a little bit of a market update because a lot of interesting things is going on. And we've seen clearly that volatility is coming back. The VIX popped above 15 today, which doesn't seem like if you look back in history, it's like, oh, 15.
Yeah, it's not a lot, but it's something compared to recently.
Yeah, it's been down by the 11s. So this popped up pretty well, about the 35-40%. This is the highest level since November 2016. And let me get a quick read on it. Finished up at 1507. I think it was... why are people saying that there's no stream? They can't hear us. I don't understand. Oh, well.
Oh, maybe there's no stream.
I don't know why that's possible. It's coming through just fine. Anyway.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Maybe some people aren't getting it for some reason.
I don't know. They must be delayed 10 minutes or something. But anyway, the VIX popped above 15. And again, this is a sign that there's something that is bothering investors, it seems. And what are the reasons? Is maybe this whole issue about tensions in the Middle East over Syrian gas attacks, and now a move, verbal and a military buildup in aimed at North Korea in the Pacific area. We see that the S&P dipped below the 50-day moving average again, the second test in the past 2 weeks. It finished just, I believe midday it bounced, and it finished just above its 50-day moving average, which we talked about at length last time, you know, right? Gold is holding above 1270. Yeah. Crude now about 53. And the U.S. dollar sinks below key support. So everybody's going to safe haven currencies, which is the yen. And by the way, I've never understood why the yen is considered a safe haven currency. You would think the U.S. dollar would be a safe haven currency.
Yes, I would think so too. Much more so than the yen.
Because you know the yen, they're if anyone's a currency manipulator, it's the Japanese.
Yes, and they've been very successful at it.
Yeah, and they've been trying their best to bring this down and do all sorts of asset purchases, quantitative easing, holding off, holding tight on certain levels of the bonds. I mean, just crazy. But speaking of currency manipulators, for whatever it's worth, the U.S. is now not going to be labeling at this point China as a currency manipulator. And you remember something, that was one of the first things that Donald Trump was going to do when he gained.
Yeah, I guess somebody lectured him on it, and it turned out it wasn't such a good idea, or the Chinese are not really trying to do much anymore. They used to be more than they are today as a manipulator. They used to be more aggressive.
Yeah, but seems like we're not going to label them that. And there's been a variety of interesting tweets from Donald Trump today about how, well, you know, trade will do much better if China can control North Korea. And if China doesn't help us out with North Korea, we'll just handle it ourselves. That probably didn't add to the calmness of markets.
No.
You know? And then the other thing that is, I think, is causing some consternation with markets is the whole idea that it really doesn't appear that there is any expectation at this point from anyone that this tax plan or tax reform plan will be, none of it will happen before the end of this year.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, healthcare has to get done first and all this. And Congress, by the way, hurrah, is on recess. A nice little 2 week vacation because they got so much done. They get so much done. Quick reminder for all of you out there that are listening, this is important, that you have until April 17th, the Monday following the 15th, because this week, this year it's on a weekend, to file your taxes and to fund your IRAs for 2016. Just a friendly reminder. Do it after that. Get all sorts of problems.
Well, no, you don't. You don't really have problems. You have to pay fees, and you can still file in any as long as it's in before October 15th.
Yeah, but you can't get your IRA in after.
Oh, the IRA thing. Yeah, that's different.
Right. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Okay. Earnings season getting underway. We have this week coming up, Delta Airlines, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, PNC Bank, a couple other banks too. Next week, Netflix, plus about 100 more companies coming up. So what's going to be interesting is whether or not if reality meets expectations, because the expectations are that some of the banking numbers are going to be a lot better because this, you know, credit spreads have done a lot better and they've widened out in favor of the banks and yields and all that. But now that's all recently reversed. The idea that there's going to be less regulation, well, that's going to be postponed for some time. The idea that there's going to be some tax benefit for banks, well, that's, again, postponed for some time. So, you know, I think that there is this, I don't know, just big questions, I think, that are out there. Don't you feel that vibe at all?
A little bit. I'm waiting for these numbers to really fall through the floor.
Which numbers?
All the numbers.
Oh. Everything, every number.
Pretty much every number.
And it doesn't matter what the number is. I think there is some, I mean, there's been some momentum. There's clearly been more manufacturing output. There's been some better consumer sentiment. Spending's, again, subdued. Inflation has been picking up, and that has some pricing power availability to help with profitability of some companies. But again, you know, that's probably why there is this this lack of spending. I mean, prices are going up. What happens when prices are going up? People are like, I'm not buying that. I mean, that's simple.
Well, unless they think that it's going to keep going up.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Well, that's the inflation psychology is it goes up and then it goes up and then it goes down. You want it. And it goes up and you go, get it now.
Well, yeah, that's the velocity of money psychology, right? Or thesis where you have, but for so long, you know, the whole, we've been in such a, I don't want to say deflation and I don't want to say stagflation either, but a no inflation, just a nothing. We've been nowhere for the longest period of time.
Right. There's no rush. You don't need to rush out and buy anything.
And I do think that we're seeing, and we'll talk about this, that consumers have adopted a much different way of buying things. There's so much more availability to when you're shopping to do a price comparison. I mean, I'm out there and I'm buying something and I'm like clicking a button and see if I could find it cheaper and then showing the person at the desk, here, look, I got it cheaper over here. Okay, we'll price match.
Right.
So it kind of keeps that a little bit down, especially for, you know, certain companies that are in anything to do with Amazon or any of these online deals.
Yeah, if you're competing with Amazon, you have to price match.
Mm-hmm.
And they all do. A lot of companies do.
Yeah. So the other thing that I want to mention about the markets, and then we'll end it on this issue with what's going on with markets, is I was wondering if the early sell-off, in particular today, where markets were down, I think the Dow was down over 100 points at one point today, finished down only about 10 points. Could the early sell-off be attributed to the rumors that Putin is not going to be meeting with Secretary of State Tillerson? Because Tillerson flew over there. He's over there. But supposedly the meeting that's been lined up, it's not happening. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did, and I'm still baffled by it because it really doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, you think there was no meeting and Tillerson said, I'm getting on a plane anyway?
I see that. I find that hard to believe.
I mean, it's a nice plane ride. He flies in Air Force, whatever he flies into.
I don't know. Maybe Air Force, the old one, the old clunker.
Yeah, so he gets to fly over there, has a good meal, and you know, sits first class.
Yeah, you're in Russia. Don't forget that part.
Yeah.
A good meal is sketchy.
Yeah, you get the borscht, you get vodka, you get some
The caviar.
Caviar, of course. Some good.
They get the good caviar. They get the good caviar.
Sturgeon. Sure. Smoked fish. But now here's what's interesting. This is why I say this, is as soon as the rumor was followed up, the rumor that he wasn't going to meet with Tillerson, and then there was a follow-up that, oh, now Putin will meet with him, the market started to move up.
You know, I sometimes get the impression, even though it's almost impossible to prove, but when you see stuff like this, I've always gotten the impression that Putin or his boys or someone uses these moments to buy and sell.
Oh yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, it's an old theory. Yeah, I've never been convinced it's not true.
Why not?
No, I've always thought it was true.
Why not? That makes a lot of sense. What the hell?
What I'd do.
Yeah,
if there's no law again, what are they going to do? Was the SEC going to find Putin? I don't think so.
Right, and is Russia going to find Putin?
No,
I don't think so.
Well, how did Putin get so damn rich?
Yeah, what is he worth? He's worth some ungodly amount
of billions. I think he's just playing the market.
Yeah, could be.
You don't even need an offshore account.
Right. held right at home.
I mean, that is done by certain people in the United States, but it's always through a, you know, secondary accounts and through Barbados or something. They do some buying and selling. But you can, Putin can really move markets.
Okay, we will now say something. Short market.
Yeah, short everything. And he probably has a short choice. Market.
Yeah, so then, I was wondering also if the other news item today that the midday move up could be attributed to the news that the other manipulator of markets, and I mean the oil manipulators, Saudi Arabia now wants to extend production cuts.
Right, which is against all their philosophies.
Yeah, so now you have this going on. They're going to, you know, going to extend production cuts because you can see how well it worked with the excess inventory that we have that's built up. And while they do say that everybody's been playing by the rules.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to use my spreadsheet for this, and I'm going to document all this, and I will provide the information back to who's going to fine them for saying something that's incorrect. As long as the ends justify the means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can't be. They're judgment proof.
Yep. Nobody's coming after them. All right. Let's take it about face for a moment, and let's talk about something that is on everyone's mind. It's away from the markets, although somewhat related here. We have to talk about this whole. I am certain this what I'm about to bring up here is going to be part of the No Agenda show this week, which you can listen to, of course, on Thursdays and Sundays.
I don't believe it's going to be a big part of the show.
You don't think so?
No. It's really why.
Well, I because the whole spin and the smear part of it, I think it's kind of fascinating. I mean,
yeah, but it's not really something that, you know, it's not. It's more of just an impact on the stock and United Airlines and its CEO than it is on world events, it seems to me.
I agree with you. It's not a world event issue, but I think it is indicative.
It's just funny. I mean, if you want to, once in a while, I guess you can just discuss stuff because it's funny and maybe have a clip of that guy screaming.
That first of all, I thought it was horrific. It was terrible. So we're talking about the whole customer service, the whole customer service episode with United Airlines. What happened was that it seems that United Airlines on this flight had an overbooked flight. They said, okay, listen, we need four seats on the flight. We'll give away $400.
Yeah, but you have to also mention the four seats were for employees of another airline as a courtesy. So they bumped people to give free rides to these people.
But what happened was that they said, okay, so we're going to give you $400. Anybody want off? No.
I think it went up to $800.
And then it went to $800. Yeah. And then they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do a random a check of seats, you know, just a random drawing of seats. And those four people are going to have to get off the plane. First of all, I'd be awfully pissed off too if I had a seat on a plane that was confirmed that I paid for, that I was on time for, I got on the plane, and then all of a sudden they're telling me.
You were sitting there.
I'm sitting there, and they said, you have to get off. I'm like.
I mean, Southwest, when they do this, they usually stop people at the gate before they get on, before they start bumping people like that. They never take anyone off the plane as much smarter. And the other thing I should mention is that, generally speaking, when this happens, one of these situations happens, I'm one of the first people to volunteer because you get a free ticket to where you're going. You get cash. If there's no cash, sometimes it's like a rinky-dink deal. I won't do it unless I really have to be someplace. Mm-hmm. But I'll take it, especially on a carrier like Southwest where they're doing a flight every hour or two to the same destination. And I will always take that deal. And then apparently if they can't get enough people to take the initial deal, they up the ante. $800 is a lot of money, it seems to me, for this.
Right.
But anyway, then everybody gets that amount, it turns out. To be fair. So when this happened, the thing that the airlines, somebody's discussed this before, that you can do is just start raising the money. You say $800, we have nobody for $800, we'll do it. How about $1,200 and a free ticket? How about $1,200 and two free tickets? I mean, you can start doing that and somebody's going to get off the plane and that guy's not going to be physically taken out. I have to assume that the management of United Airlines doesn't allow a very aggressive deal making to get people off the plane.
No, they just allow aggressive assault.
Yeah, instead, they just assault people. This to me is a mismanaged company. I blame the CEO.
So what happened was, again, for those of you who maybe for whatever reason did not see the video, we have a link that we put on the site that actually has a great multi-camera view of the video extraction of this 69-year-old passenger who ended up bloody and very disoriented. This was an Asian man who was a doctor, and he said he had to get on. And so take a look over at DH Unplugged and check this out. But here's the thing. So first of all, the CEO of United Airlines comes out and says that he's supporting the actions of the employees in this particular instance. Again, it was for people that needed to connect to planes or something that happened. It was a courtesy flight for other airline employees, and they decided to bump some of these people. They went in aggressively, grabbed this guy who did not want to get off, who started like squealing like a pig. I mean, right? You heard it.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, he started squealing. Okay. The cops grabbed this guy, and they basically, I don't know what happened, or he he passed out. I don't know what happened, because he kind of went limp, and he smashed his face on the armrest of one of the chairs, and then they just, the scary thing was, they just dragged him down the aisle.
Yeah.
That was the very disturbing part of this whole thing. You know, wasn't
people are going nuts on the plane going, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God."
The CEO sends an email that accuses the pastor of being disruptive and belligerent, which I guess,
yes,
I guess it's true. You could say that there's some fact here saying that sir, please get off the plane. No, that's belligerent. Right. I mean, and he's disruptive because he was squealing when they were grabbing
dragging
him. So he's disruptive.
Yeah. No, the CEO is an a-hole.
Yeah. This was
obviously
bad. Right.
Which I think goes all the way down and up and down the company. That guy, you know, he was named he was just named like a couple of days earlier, the PR news or some major newsletters, the communicator of the year.
Right. So then the Chicago police say that he just fell while he was being dragged off the plane. Okay. Look at the video.
You know, the problem is they got so many videos of this. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
We know what happened.
Exactly. Now, here's what's really interesting. So this is going on most of the day. United Airlines is down. China is up in arms. The Chinese people are freaking out about this whole thing, because don't forget, United has a big hub over there.
There's a lot of social media in China, and they don't handle it the way we do because it's new to them. And the Chinese meme was they picked that guy out because it was racism.
Oh.
He was Chinese, and they pulled him off the plane.
Was he actually Chinese or just Asian? Was he definitely Chinese?
Yes.
He was Chinese. Okay. This is Dr. David Dow.
He's Chinese.
Now, here's the thing. So before the CEO comes out with, let me give you the punchline here. The CEO did apologize and all this after the fact, late in the day, probably seeing that his stock was down and what the hell, I got to do something about this. But there's about four or five things, a little smear and spin campaign that went on. So we saw this on, I don't remember where this was, but he was charged with 98 felony drug counts in 2003 for illegally prescribing and trafficking painkillers, blah, blah, blah. It was a big criminal complaint. He allegedly solicited sex from a male patient in exchange for drug prescriptions. He attended...
The doctor?
Well, no, he attended school in Vietnam in the 70s, so maybe he's Vietnamese.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, but he was considered Chinese by the Chinese social media, Asian, for
talk
sure.
Racist and racial profiling. Just because he looks a little Asian, he's Chinese automatically. But whatever. He was eventually convicted of 6 felony counts, blah, blah, all this stuff, okay? And he surrendered his medical license, and 1 month later got it back. Kentucky Board of Medical Licensure allowed him to resume his practice in 2015. Now, all of this, let's say it's true. And let's go one step further. Let's say something crazy here, that the guy is a murderer, okay? Let's just say he's a murderer. He's a mass murderer, okay? And, but he's out of jail. What still does that have to do with the fact that he was randomly chosen and then physically assaulted and then dragged off the plane? I don't understand.
It's some lame idea that some public relations person, obviously hired by the great communicator Munoz or whatever his name is, it was an idea that one of these people came up with. Let's smear the guy so we can maybe. What is that accomplishing?
Yeah, I don't.
Does that make you sound at like a better airline? Because you're now, first of all, you beat the guy up, you threw him off the plane. Physically, you damaged him,
yeah.
And now you're smearing him on top of it? Oh, right. My God, are these guys nuts?
Yeah, And while some of this may be true, any of these things that they get wrong is now a libel suit on top of the assault.
Oh, yeah. This guy doesn't have to do prescriptions much after this deal.
He's good. He can retire.
If he's got any kind of a Schlockmeister attorney, he's making millions.
Yep, he's good. So, Dr. Dow, by the way, if you want, once the money does come in, we are very available to manage it for you. We'll do it at a reduced charge as well. And we will we will be happy to provide you a car service to get you to our office. Okay, let's move on.
After he flies in on Delta.
Well, Qualcomm, which you know has been in the crosshairs of Apple for a variety of things, where they put, a $1 billion lawsuit against them and all sorts of problems here. They're hitting back at Apple's charges that were made in a U.S. lawsuit back in January, saying the iPhone maker breached agreements with the firm and encouraged regulatory attacks on his business in various jurisdictions around the world by making false statements. And this is after, again, Qualcomm was charged with overcharging for chips and all that. Now, there's a lot of interesting news of things that are happening with Apple recently. This is right in your wheelhouse in terms of the technology angle of this. Today's Tuesday, so maybe it was Monday, late last week. Imagination Technologies, which is a British firm whose technology helps to process the graphics on the iPhone. There was an announcement that Apple said it planned to stop using the company's technology in its devices within about 15 months to 2 years. Stock was down 70%.
Nice.
Okay. Today, there was a piece written by an analyst at Bankhaus Lampe, and they claimed that there was strong evidence that Apple was working on making its own power management chips for the iPhone, which then took down Dialog Tech, which is a German company, by about 15% today. And some of the other suppliers are starting to see some problems, like Cirrus Networks, Cuervo, Avgo, Qualcomm. We know about that one. Texas Instruments. Skyworks Solutions. So it's interesting because the question is going to be now that if Apple wants to possibly have better pricing controls, are they going to, and they have so much money in the bank, they could just start, you know, their own chip companies, right?
They could build a fab.
Yeah. For a variety of the different components. And who knows where the, you know, where that line is between, oh, we're using it, we did a reverse engineering on it, we built our own. Oh, prove that we are, you know.
Well, yeah. I think that what happened here is once Apple, you know, kind of didn't cut ties completely with Intel, but for the pad in particular and the iPhone, they worked with, what's the name of that company that does they just do IP chips. And they decided that they could just buy IP. Intellectual property.
Yeah, you're talking about the British firm.
Yeah, why are we forgetting their
name? With an A.
Yeah, A.
They were bought, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's why I think I'm starting to forget them.
No, it's anyway. Your age, actually, but that's okay.
It could be. Yeah. I need some vitamin B12. But anyway, this company does the little processor chip, a low-power processor chip that everyone uses. But what you do is you buy the basic IP that makes a chip work, and then you customize it. You eventually make whatever kind of chip you want using this chip. And and once they got into doing that, I'm sure they're looking around it because there's a lot of fabulous semiconductor companies, as they're called, or as my wife likes to call them, fabulous. But they're fabulous. All they sell is just designs. And then you take the design, you customize it the way you want it, and then you take it to a CMOS factory, and you hand it over. They make some sample chips, and then you play with them, and then you do a run of chips. Saves a ton of money, and it's very proprietary when you're done. And that's what they're up to.
I mean, all
the way with this. They're just going to go all the way.
Maybe that model is great because you really don't have to do anything. I mean, you're basically in the R&D part of things, then you just basically sell that.
Yeah.
There's nothing for production. You're not, I mean, you have less employees. Well, you know, you don't have any manufacturing employees. You have no cost for anything besides the R&D, which is expensive.
AMD has kind of moved in that direction. Intel still has the big factories. And it's changing things quite a bit. But it's got a pretty, you know, if you've developed some really cool chips that Apple's using and they decide that they're too expensive, you're kind of screwed.
Well, I mean, it would make sense, especially if they are selling cheaper phones and they are not selling as many of certain products. And I don't know. I just find it, this is something to watch, put on the radar screen, all the different companies that are involved with the Apple supply chain and who will be crushed next. I mean, the 70% move, a lot of these companies like Imagination Technologies, like 70 or 80% of their revenue was tied to Apple. And a lot of these other companies have really done the same. Whereas, because why not, right? I mean, if you're going to have this amount of potential sales to a company, why not just, you know, what are you going to say? No, I'd like to diversify. Who cares where the money comes from? Well, the money's good. Let's make it.
Yeah. So,
couple of other things here. Back to the airplanes discussion here. But the FCC, the chairman, Ajit Pai, issued the following statement regarding the proposal that the FCC terminate its 2013 proceeding that sought to relax rules. This pisses me off. The rules that are governing mobile communications and planes. He said, I stand with airline pilots, flight attendants, and the America's flying public against the FCC's ill-conceived 2013 plan to allow people to make cell phone calls on planes. I do not believe that moving forward with this plan is in the public interest, and taking it off the table permanently will be a victory for Americans across the country who, like me, value a moment of quiet at 30,000 feet. What a load of shit. I mean, there's that fine line between being, well, disruptive, annoying, and, you know, the people chatting on the phone and, you know, using a phone. I mean, what does this mean? They're going to cut off voice. They're going to cut off text. They're going to cut off any kind of use of the phones on the plane again.
I have no idea.
The old deal was you can't use phones on the plane because it disrupts the entire flight command center. Remember that whole thing?
Well, they had a bunch of bogus arguments. We know that.
Right. So now it's just because this guy wants to snooze and doesn't want to be hearing somebody else talking.
Well, I don't know how you can talk off of a plane anyway. Once you're at 30,000 feet, you can't reach any cell towers.
But you can go on Wi-Fi.
Yeah. If you got Wi-Fi in the thing.
This is like in Japan. In Japan, there are these no cell phone signs like on all public transport. You may have seen these. And people do not talk on the phones in Japan. As a matter of fact, it's very rare to find somebody in a public setting ever, unless they're American or Canadian, that are actually on their phone. They're doing all sorts of texting, which is pretty impressive with their letters anyway.
Yes, indeed. I don't know how you do it.
So, you know, but it is pretty rude, you know, somebody yapping to somebody else. Oh, hello, Sam. How you doing? What's going on? Tell me about the kids. Tell me. I mean, it's annoying. I get that.
ARM chips.
ARM, yes. Yeah, ARM. Duh. Yep. Dumb. We got one of the three letters. We have 33% of the way there.
Yeah, we have one letter.
Yeah.
A.
Yeah. In Michigan, there was a survey on professional fundraisers. It seems that the professional fundraisers, you know, these guys that are on the phone hawking you for money and that are really good.
Oh, yeah. I'm with the fire department. Yeah, sure you are.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There was a study that showed that on average, about 61% of the money that was raised for charities in 2016 was kept by the fundraiser.
Of course.
And they said there's the Better Business Bureau recommends charities spend no more than 35% on such fundraisers, which is not cheap either.
No.
You know, so next time you get a call from the Police Benevolent Association or, you know, I never understood why I get the calls like, we need you to help out to, you know, the police. You know, you value the police, right? Yes. Well, you know, we need to make sure that they are, you know, have financially stable and all this and you know, make sure that things are paid for, blah, blah. I'm thinking, wait a minute. Don't my taxes pay for this anyway?
Yeah, we're not in Mexico.
I don't understand. I mean, and they make it sound like, you know, you'll get
protection. They're all going to die.
You'll get protection.
You're working for free.
Exactly. So anyway, all right, let's talk about Tesla. Last week, we talked about how Tesla surpassed Ford in market cap. And they were and they were nipping at the heels of General Motors. Well, they surpassed General Motors today.
Yeah, we noticed.
Now, I did two interesting charts here that I put together. So the first chart called Auto Stocks Price Performance. Again, you go over to DH Unplugged and click on this episode number 357 and scroll down to the show notes and you'll see the Auto Stocks Price Performance chart. Now, here's something interesting. I went back to sort of where the IPO for Tesla was back in the end of 2010. And I looked at the price performance of Tesla to General Motors to Ford. That's a pretty reasonable amount of time.
I think so. You have a nice chart here.
Tesla's up 1,415%. And let's just say that GM and Ford are flat.
To say the least.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit, if you took out the, well, either way, they'd be down about 1%. But if you know,
so buying Tesla back in 2011, you get a 14 bagger.
Yeah. Not bad.
I would think, no, not bad as the, although I don't think anyone in their right mind would have kept it. When it got to an 8-bagger back in 2014, and then it started dropping like a rock.
Yeah.
I think most people would have gotten out.
Yeah, about 50%. I mean, it's done it a couple of times. Look at, it did it back in the mid-2015. It did it in the mid-2016. Yeah. Actually, it looks like the middle of the year is not a good time for them, now that I'm looking at
I'm thinking it's going to do it again.
I would think so. Well, let's look at the next thing, which I put up, which is a table that I put together on auto stocks valuations. I went and I looked at the auto stocks around the world, some of the major ones, and I said, okay, let's take a look at what's going on here from a earnings per share, PE ratio, price to book, price to sales, market cap, and net profit margin. I thought the net profit margin was interesting, and then I color-coded it. So anything standing out to you?
Well, price to book stands out. A net profit margin really stands out of Tesla.
Yeah.
The price to book is 10, which is outrageous. The price to sales is 7, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And the net profit margin is minus 11.
And the PE ratio is an NA because it's incalculable.
Right.
Because they have a negative $4.86 earnings per share.
It's a huge money loser.
Huge money loser. But the market cap is 52 billion, which again is above Ford, it's above Nissan, it's above
everybody General but Motors. Toyota.
I don't have General Motors on here, but I tried to give it a lot of things around the world. But basically what we're seeing here is, I guess, the hope for that they're going to grow into this, and next year with the Gigafactory and all this, that they're going to is this just simply an Amazon, you know, when we put these together, is this Amazon, Netflix, Tesla, and it's just like, this is what it's going to be?
If the market collapses, this would be a great short, I'll bet. What I'm also looking at here on this chart, which is, it really draws my attention, is the low, relatively low market cap of Ford and Nissan.
Ford, yeah.
Compared to the worldwide, I mean, Toyota's got the big one, it's $173 billion. And they really dominant company. And price earnings ratio of 9.75 seems reasonable. Ford's 9.78. Nissan is 8.4. Then you get the Volkswagen's 13. Even after all the toils, troubles, and tribulations that they've had.
Right.
It's Volkswagen makes a good product, I have to say. And then Daimler's 8.4. So Tesla, I don't know how Tesla's ever going to. The infinite price earnings ratio is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to possibly do something with, get in around the rest of the world? I mean, they're in some countries, but they're really, you know, U.S. centric. Ford is global, but clearly Nissan and Toyota are Asian, and they have that neck of the woods. Volkswagen and Daimler are
Yeah, but they're
European.
Also global. I mean, there's Toyota factories in the United States.
Right. So there you go. All right, moving right along. Another retailer biting the dust. Gymboree announced
that. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know they're still in business.
Yeah, but obviously they didn't know this either, nor did any of their potential people that would be buying their products. This is a children's clothing store, I guess we can call it. They they're going to be closing, 1,300 stores. It hasn't posted a profit since 2011. Losses now totaling more than 800. There you go. And we mentioned this, I think, briefly, but we didn't get the final story. H.H. Gregg, which I always thought that was just a terrible name for a store. I didn't like all those.
I don't even know where they are. I've never seen
it. I've seen one. It is a. It is the worst of a. Let me see what this. Do you know what BrandsMart is?
BrandsMart.
BrandsMart, I can't stand. I mean, you get the thing and you got to go in the back like and pick it up. But it's kind of the worst of the worst of a Best Buy. It's like it crossed with a Radio Shack, but not as
old fashioned.
You know, they had a lot of like washers and dryers and refrigerators, stuff like that. And I mean, you could buy that anywhere. You could buy that online. You could buy that at Home Depot. Why would you go to this place? And I never thought anything they had was top notch. So they were kind of like low end and a crappy overall selection.
Huh.
I walked in there twice. I said, this place is never going to last. Schmucko didn't short them.
Well, you were right.
Yeah. I said, I don't know how this is going to work. And now all we have really left is Best Buy. I mean, and you have a couple of things out by you. I Sound Advice still has a few things around, but that's pretty much it. I don't know what you need these places for anyway, unless you want to touch and feel something. But
well, and they have to compete with Walmart, who have pretty much the same stuff.
Yeah. It's no longer that you can go, like you used to think that, okay, I'm going to buy an electronics item in Walmart. It's going to be the lower end of things. It's going to be an Emerson, you know, a Sharp.
Yes. Or a Westinghouse. No, Sharp is a good brand. Or Emerson is.
A Westinghouse. God knows Westinghouse.
What. Yeah, Westinghouse. That's a good one.
Right? So you would think that, you know, but that, they had to step up their game. So now this place, which maybe was the next notch up, you know, no longer has any kind of reason to go there. And in another shocking bit of news, Dryships does yet another reverse split, a 1-for-4. Stock was back down to 177, which was a 30% decline.
It was actually 4-for-1.
It's a 1-for-4. So they had one, now they have four. Four. No,
wasn't it the other way around?
It's a 1-for-4. So you get one share for every four you had. 1-for-4.
Yeah, it's a 4-for-4. Yeah, okay, right. One share, you get four.
If you have
four shares, you get one.
Right, so it's a 1-for-4.
I thought it'd be a 4-for-1.
If I had 4-for-1, it would mean I get four for every one I had.
If I had 4-for-1, I would think it means I get four.
If you had one.
No, if I have four and I get one, four to four, okay, whatever. We know what it means.
Yeah.
You have four shares, now you got one.
Yeah, you have one share and the price goes up by four times. So you still have the same amount of money.
Which never happens.
Yeah. Well, so look at this. So I went back again just for the hell of it. And I went back to the chart and looked at a price of the shares on a chart from 2007. And if you look at that on a per share basis, on a split adjusted basis with all these cockamamie reverse splits.
You did this bit once before.
Yeah, here it is. But here's what's interesting.
Yeah, there's the short of the decade.
Yeah. And they keep on just making it happen. They keep on making this thing just, it's kind of like it's on a total life support. And somehow they keep on, like, somebody raises its arm to say, oh, look, he's still alive. You know, by these reverse
splits. This is like $6,000.
$6 million.
$6 million. Okay. $6 million to $1.77.
Yeah. Appreciate.
How does that work? Of course, all your money was actually made probably from 2008 to 2009, because that's when it took the tumble.
Right.
But
I mean, you know,
it's just kind of,
you could only make 100% on a short. Right. So if a share is 100.
Well, not if you're doing. Yeah, that's true with a short, but you could do it with calls. You could make a lot of money. You
keep on making money on this.
Yeah.
If you buy something for $1,000 and it goes to zero, you can only make $1,000 on a short.
Right.
You can't make infinite amount of money, even though this looks like it. It looks like you would have bet. Oh.
But you could on a call.
Yes. A put. You mean a put?
I mean a put. What am I thinking?
Yeah, a put. You keep on putting
a real
thing.
Good put.
Yeah.
Because you could have bought a put, I'm sure, when it was $6 million. For $5 million, you could probably, or let's say $1 million, you probably could have bought just get boatloads of puts for a penny on the, you know, a penny on the dollar kind of thing. And I mean, that
the puts will also self-adjust. They'll adjust also. But
but it wouldn't have been that way back in 08 when the thing was sitting there at the top.
Yeah. But there's like
it was start self-adjusting, but it would already look at this. This is so fast. It's like I don't think you could ever figure it out.
Yeah.
So this is an astonishing chart.
Yeah. Even if it goes up 100%, it doesn't matter. I mean, it would be nice for someone to have bought this and to go up 100%. But, you know, it will do that again because now there's only 144,000 shares outstanding.
I'm telling you, this is the craziest stock ever.
Yeah, this should be out of business. All right, just a note for everybody. If you want to follow John C. Dvorak over on Twitter, it's The Real Dvorak. And I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm almost at 15,000 followers. I need like another 100. Everybody get on. If you're not following me on Twitter, get on there. If you're not following on John on Twitter, at The Real Dvorak, get on there too. I'm Andrew Horowitz, one word. Of course, you could donate to the show. Thank you for all the donations that have come in. If you want to donate for John's birthday, of course, that's fine. Also, the official Passover Easter Fund is available for donations. That's a special donation this week. It will make you actually closer to God. And have a, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in the rule book that we wrote, John, you told me that if they donated for the Passover Easter week, that their life will be better and they'll be more profitable with their investments. I think you said that.
That's what the rabbi said.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, it was the rabbi.
Yeah. I don't say anything like that.
Nothing like that. Okay.
But it's probably true. Probably.
All right. Let's look at the close to the pin. Oh, this was a good one. We have a winner. Actually, this is the same winner that won the Netflix challenge recently.
What? We have the same guy winning two of these things?
This is the second time.
We're going to just use him for advice.
Yeah. Warren S. came in with the closest to the pin for Snap, which was a very difficult one because it moved around quite remarkably.
Yes.
On average, the people who were involved in this were at $19.38. And Warren came in, his guess was $20.78. And the final stock price was $20.82. I was at $20.10. And you were at $18.50. And I think Curry was involved in this one too.
Yeah, what'd he do?
He was like 40% off or something like that. I think he was at 13 or something like that. Or something really pretty down there.
Dreamer. I was over aggressive with mine.
It can still get there. Today it closed at 20.58. It tried to.
No, it can still get there. And it will.
Yeah. I think so.
In fact, Curry's will be eventually matched by this dog of a company.
Yep. I agree. Moving on to New York. In New York, there's a plan to make attending public colleges and universities free for students. From middle-class families. So the plan that was announced in January, and it was recently approved.
Should be free for everybody. This is a form of classism. I don't like it.
You have to earn $125,000 or less can't participate in this. And it's going to cost New York about $163 million and helping out about 1 million families. So 1 million families, that means that they're going to give $163 per family, right?
All I know is that the price of the college is already too expensive and this should be free for everybody.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, when I went to school, it was free. And I went to the University of California at Berkeley. It's not a slouch of a place.
It was free? Totally free? I mean, you had to pay for room and board books, I'm sure, but the college.
Oh, yeah, you had to buy books. You had to do this. And the tuition was like $100. It was just some sort of it was like a filing fee.
Yeah, these days, even the local community colleges are not cheap.
No, it's because they know they can gouge kids who can go get student loans and put themselves in infinite debt. And yeah, it's a scam. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this will come together. I've been actually talking with an expert on college planning.
You know what might come next? I just thought of this.
What?
Tuition for high school.
Oh, so they're going to switch it over. But we have.
Might as well scam the kids in high school.
We have tuition for high school. We have it's called taxes.
Well, the taxes used to pay for universities too.
Yeah, but now everybody needs to be a millionaire. Everything is about money. So now that the professors, and I don't begrudge anybody from making any money, of course. I think it's only reasonable that people should make a reasonable living or a good living. But it's gotten to a point that now, you know, these professors, that not only do they have their pay and all that, but the, you know, some of these guys, they create their own books that they make mandatory for the students to buy for their class.
Scam.
Have you seen this?
Oh yeah, this has been going on for years. It's because there's all these publishing companies now that are, it's called custom publishing. And you can take, you're the professor, you can take one of their books that they normally sell, use pieces of that and some other stuff and some of your own writings and stick it into a custom book that's pretty much not that much different than just a standard book and charge $120 for it.
Right. And and you have to buy that in order for, it's part of the class requirement.
Yeah. And you can gouge the students with books. Yeah. Very common.
I think it's brilliant, by the way, but bad.
Oh, it's very, I think it's dynamite. But again, it's a jip.
Let's see if we have time to do this. We have a couple minutes. Let's see. Well, let me skip to something here because this is a whole new ETF thing that's coming out here that I thought was just probably one of the worst things I've ever seen. But I'm going to skip this for a second. I would like to hearken back to two things. We may talk about that next week. Do you remember that recording you made of the IRS agent calling you right to tell you that, oh my God, you owe money and you need to pay it now or basically going to jail and all this bad stuff?
Right.
That was, I mean, they called and you kept them on the phone for a pretty long time, but
I tried to keep them on the phone as long as I could.
Yeah. Well, it seems, I don't know if you saw this, but in India, the police said that on Saturday arrested the alleged mastermind behind a call center scam that targeted thousands of Americans in the United States, netting more than $300 million.
Yeah, dynamite.
Sagar Thakkar, kind of nice rhyming name. Sagar, also known as Shaggy, was arrested at the Mumbai International Airport. A police officer said no other details there. But he said that the U.S. Justice Department last year charged scores of people in India and the United States with taking part in the scam, which call centers, their agents impersonated IRS agents, immigration and other federal officials and demanded payments for non-existent debts. The department said it had at least 15,000 people were targeted and they lost and defrauded by more than $300 million.
Yeah. I had a second shot at this and I didn't record it because I was not thinking clearly and I need B12. And the second time this guy came out, he was different. It was a slightly different pitch. And he went on and on. I said, well, I'll just pay cash. If the guys come, the guys are going to come over. The sheriff's going to come over any minute, he says. So I'll just pay cash, which is, you don't have that much cash. I said, I've got, and it went on and on. I dragged it out. I said, yeah, I got 10 grand on me. And then he was actually kind of stunned. He said, nobody has 10 grand on them. I do have 10 grand in cash, usually in the safe in the house. And I kept dragging this guy out, and I forgot what it was that triggered it, but something triggered him, and he starts yelling at me and cussed me out and hung up.
Well, he thought the problem was he couldn't collect.
No, the problem, well, there's that, but the problem was that I had kept him on the phone for a very long time. I acted really stupid and said, well, okay, what else do I need to do? And well, how can I prevent this? You know, I just air all the pitches that he had. Well, you want to stop this? You want to pay now? You want to give us a credit card and all this stuff? And I just dragged it out forever. So I was dead wood in the parlance. But I never heard a guy cuss me out like that. He cussed me out.
Yeah, that would have been a good record. You have to get up on your recording game.
That would have been a winner. I mean, I felt bad. And I haven't gotten a call since.
Ah, that's good. All right, and the final thing here we'll talk about before we get to the game, the weekly stock picks, is I guess we can title this when things can't get much worse. We already know that Zimbabwe had an inflation problem for some time.
And I have a $1 trillion note.
You do, which is worth, which is kind of the exact valuation process that they went through with dry ships. They took the lead from dry ships.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it's worth like a dollar maybe, or not even that.
Oh, I don't think it's worth that much.
So I guess here's what's happening. In Zimbabwe, the commercial banks will soon be compelled by the government to accept livestock such as cattle, goats, and sheep as collateral for cash loans to informal businesses under a law that is being presented to Parliament on Tuesday. So, yeah. Can you imagine that you're a bank and you're going to have your herd of sheep or what do you have? Like, okay, I need a $250 loan. Bessie over there you can see she's the one with a little bit of darker. We're going to put a little thing in her ear. That is going to be collateral for that loan. Oops, Bessie dies. What are they going to do? Call in the loan?
Oh, I guess they'd have to.
We ate Bessie.
Well, at least you get your money's worth.
I guess. Under the movable property security interest bill tabled for debate on finance this week, it's going to compile and administer a collateral security register in which small business operators and individuals also can register their movable assets as security or credit. So I guess you can somehow. I don't understand how you put an actual an animal or a something with a terminal date on it. It's not like you're putting up a house or. You know,
anything that doesn't die.
So yeah, how do you do this? But this is happening in Zimbabwe. This is why they're obviously not so good with finance.
I'm sure that's one of many reasons.
Next, I'm gonna have if you'd like, your ideas we'll put up. Any idea you want, we'll put up as collateral. You know.
Yeah.
Let's go to the big question of the day. Everybody's, of course. I mean, not only fascinated, but probably sitting on the edge of their seat wondering, and that is, what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine this week?
What was the thing I just wrote about?
B12.
Yeah, no, obviously. But I never remember these columns once I write them. It's a pretty good one, too.
You could probably use those columns for collateral in Zimbabwe.
I probably could. It was a good column on. It's a topic that's worth reading. It was about. I was taking apart something that is bothering me. Let me look it up.
The iRobot.
No. Oh no! It just came in at the last minute, and I just said, "Oh, this would be good to write about." And let's see what it looks like. Boom. Oh yeah, money grab. Yeah, this was about. Sorry, I had to do this. And it was actually a long column, too. It's like 850 words, as I recall.
What is money grab?
Well, that's the title.
Oh.
It's about, okay. This is about the German authority that oversees broadcast licensing. They've decided, and I see this happening here. They decided that internet streamers, people that stream over the internet, should be licensed like a broadcaster. And it started with Twitch.tv. And so this has become a point of debate. I think they're going to end up pulling this off. I think what's going to happen in this country is the same thing, and anyone doing streaming over the internet will have to buy the same license from the FCC that broadcasters have to buy.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a second.
You have to read the whole column because I got a very good logic behind this.
And does that include things like Facebook Live or...
I think it's going to have to.
So every person, what about FaceTime? What about Skype?
FaceTime
Skype
is not
audio?
Streaming to the public.
Not to the public.
I'm talking
one-on-one.
About
okay.
This anything that streams to the public as though it was a utility, so anyone could get it. Anyone could pick up the stream. That means it's a broadcaster. I'm telling you, this is going to happen.
So that means that any of the like the Twitter live streams and all that is going to have to be
could be
yeah I may have to pay a fee of something and register.
I'm guessing
that's insanity.
I think that this would apply to our show because you're streaming it now. I think as a podcast, no, that's just download and play. That's different.
Webinars,
that's nothing you can
webinars.
Stumble. That's not something you have to sign up for webinars. It's like cable TV has never been attached by the FCC because cable TV is like a club. You have to pay and you got to get in the club and they select stuff for you. It's not like you can just go onto the webinar with no, as though it was a broadcast. So no, webinars don't count. I'm thinking of things like Tom Likas's show.
Yeah.
Other things that you see on these US stream, anything that they're broadcasting. There's a bunch of these guys that do that.
I mean, that means we're going to have to.
No, we can just kill the stream and just be a podcast.
Right.
But by the way, this is not tomorrow. the Germans are going to, it's going to take years before they pull it off. And once they do it, then everyone's going to see. And then you see all these fees. You're going to see everyone thinking about, oh, there's extra money. We can steal more money.
Let's move along. It's making me sick.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You asked.
Yeah. Thank you. And by the way, just one final note. Did you see the SNL this weekend with Alec Baldwin playing both President Trump and Bill O'Reilly?
No. I don't watch SNL that much.
Very funny. He played both parts. Very funny.
Yeah.
He looked just like the case. Anyway,
he's a good mimic.
Yeah. Let's get over. But I don't know. They must have put some kind of something on his face to make him look like it, because I don't think he could have contorted his face that well to make it look like it.
Oh, they probably, yeah, sure. They got makeup people who can do that.
Let's take a look at the stocks. This is what we do each and every week. We come up with some stock ideas, potentially, to have a game that we play that to see how well we could do with them. We have a lot of red on there right now. If, in fact, you decide to use any of our ideas, please research them thoroughly. We are not responsible for anything that we talk about here in terms of your winning or losing. Any of the stocks that we buy may be owned by myself, John C. Dvorak, or Horowitz Company clients. We'll duly note that. You can find all of this over on DH Unplugged under the weekly stock list little button there. All right. So
a lot of red on this.
A lot of red. This
week. Yeah.
The shorts are red. The longs are red.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's bad not week. So good. It's not very good. It's just
I blame Syria.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll go with that. Your Tronc is up nicely.
That's the only failing thing.
News. That you know, with all the news going on, they should be doing well. Gilead's doing well. You're short there.
Yeah, that's it.
It's holding in. Jack in the Box short. I don't know why that's still going up. Fast food is fading, but oh well. We got stopped out on CRISPR Therapeutics, which I'm not happy about. We had a pretty wide stop on that, down 3.5%. Tesla's short is off by 2%. Campbell Soup with a huge insider is off a little bit. A couple of things. Anyway, you can take a look at those. I have one stock this week. Now, with all the trouble that's going on in video world with regard to the advertising and the ability to target ads on various platforms or websites and all that, I think the intermediaries that can serve up these advertising, like is Rocket Fuel and Trade Desk. I think I mentioned this last week. But Trade Desk is a company that basically is, I don't want to call them an intermediary. They're more of an advertising technology company where there's in the background, what a lot of these companies do is they bid instantaneously, you know, a fraction of a second as you're loading your web page, as it's coming up. There's a little bit of a bidding war going on technically, and whoever wins gets the ad for that particular space. And you can target where you want to be, and it helps advertisers get better buys as well as manage their total cost factors and all. Anyway, Trade Desk is a recent company that came to the market, and the stock chart doesn't look great, but I just thought that it would be really interesting for optimization of advertising.
No, that's an interesting idea.
So I put them on there. That's all I have.
I have a short, and this is the first time in all the years we've been doing this show that I'm doing what I'm about to do.
Oh.
I am shorting.
Oh, I can't wait.
Take Two Interactive Software.
TTWO, I believe that is.
Yep. This is a rule violation for people who like to trade on insider stuff. You don't, if somebody's selling, you just assume they're taking money off the table. It doesn't mean the stock's going to go down like it usually means when they're buying. But we have two guys that are selling this sucker, and they're selling lots of it, $22 million each. And so I'm looking at this saying, what are these two guys going to get married or something? What is the point of these guys? You know, one of them is the chairman and CEO, Strauss Zelnick. And the other one is who's the other guy here? I'm going to look him up. The other guy, I believe, is a board guy.
And this is a gaming company.
Yes.
And what's interesting about gaming, I don't understand how some of these companies have been able to compete with the quote-unquote old-fashioned gaming, right? You know, the old-fashioned gaming.
Well, unless platforms. You're getting the gambling machines.
Right, but
One guy's the CEO and the other guy's the president. Mm. I mean, what is – and they're both dumping $22 million each. I mean, I'm not seeing any evidence that this is off of – off of options or anything. They're just dumping some of their options. It looks like they're selling the stock. Let me look at the SEC Form 4 and see what there's anything on here that might give me an idea.
Maybe they need to just clip a couple of bucks off the, you know, take a little profit off the table and diversify a little bit.
I know that's what the old, that's what the thesis is. I mean, that's why you don't do what I'm about to, what I'm doing here. But I'm not doing it in
but
real
is it
20, life.
So is it $22 million each exactly?
Yes. Actually, the two of them are selling exact same amount, which is suspect in itself. It must mean something's going on. That is like maybe they get, there's some, I don't know what that means, but here they are.
If they were selling different amounts, I'd be more inclined to say that there's, you know, there's something, but the exact same amount is very odd.
I think so. But if I'm looking at the amount here and on the form, what form is this? This is Form 4, SEC Form 4, on one of the guys, Carl. They did this transaction. They did it in different blocks. It wasn't like just one big sale. I don't know. I can't figure out why they're doing this. There's no explanation.
But I still,
all I know is it's,
I still think that the gaming platforms, you know, look, we see what happened with GameStop recently. And this is where they sell a lot of their stuff through, right? It's GameStop and gaming. And gaming is very popular. There's no question about that. I have no problem with that. But you would just think that with all of the with all of the games that you have on your mobile devices or, you know, tablets, that these guys, what they've done, which is, it's a different level of gaming, these guys. But, you know, I don't know.
It's out of New York, too, which is always, I don't know, tech companies in New York don't impress me. Anyways, it's just a lark.
All right. Lark. Two insiders selling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, violation of the rules. You don't do that.
Yeah, I got you. Well, we'll see what happens with it. You may be right. Well, we'll meet up again next week. We'll have a lot more information about what's going on with regard to markets. We'll talk about these really poor investment ideas that I'm holding over for next week. These four ETFs that are just, I think, probably.
Oh, yeah. I want to hear about
politically
this.
Related. Crazy. We'll talk about that as well as we'll have some more information about what's going on with the earnings reports for many companies. So that's next Tuesday, which will be getting close to my Cuba trip.
Cuba. Cuba and the cigars.
Yeah. Cigars are going to be good. You know, and I'll also tell you, maybe remind me, I'll talk to you about the Airbnb that we got and the prices on this is pretty incredible.
I had a guy, I should note, just note this. He said, give me a long lecture about buying cigars in Cuba. He says, if you can get to the factories and get a factory tour or something, most of the employees will sell you cigars direct because they each get to have an allotment they get to take home. And they sell them to tourists. And that's the only guarantee that you're getting the real deal unless you know someone who's actually a cigar broker that's been in business for a long time and can be trusted.
Well,
you get scammed.
I'm actually going out to dinner tomorrow night with a friend of mine who does business down there in the food area. And he's been down there like 7 times. And he said, supposedly he's hooking me up with a Cohiba tour.
Cohiba would be good. I've always liked the other brands more. Cohibas are
Romeo and Julieta.
No, that's too strong. Upman is a good brand.
Upman.
Yeah.
I still like my.
And Monte Cristo.
Monte Cristo is very good.
If I smoke a cigar, it's usually a Monte Cristo. It's rare that I smoke one, but I like the Monte Cristos a lot.
Yep. I'm a Maduro smoker from the Dominican Republic. I like the Dominican cigars. There's a Tatuaje Fausto.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll get off the Dominicans and just smoke Cubans. Yeah. These other cigars
are nice.
Stink.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will see you and talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.